But Ryan Day showed that he's clearly willing to deal with that for the good stuff of legend, which we also saw, and the ability to stop on a dime, then float laterally, then hit full speed. Nobody can do it quite like Legend Bay, and nobody's done it at Ohio State like that since Braxton Miller. Let's get it. Hey, it's Chuck. We are not bemoaning the noon kickoff. We are now owning it. It's a badge of honor. We're the lunatic fringe that defines our coach's legacy when it comes to this game. They don't get to define that outside the family. Dude, we're cut from a different cloth for Ohioans. He's got it all, man. He's even got the jaw. You know the jaw? You see that jaw and you're just like, yeah, man, that's a dude. Do I want Michigan to beat Oklahoma? No way in hell. I don't know what world I'm living in. This is insane to me. And if you saw my outburst, I apologize. It's showtime now. Welcome into Chuck on Bucks. Appreciate you so much for joining me for the post-game show. Game number one, Ohio State, Ball State, and what a day. Sorry I'm a little late. My first time ever covering a game at the stadium, and it was a long day, number one. It was like 15 hours from the time I left the house to the time I came home. A lot of work, a lot of awesome stuff seen and awesome folks talked to, and an insight gained, and we learned, I think, quite a bit from this game here, but I don't know how much we can take away from this game moving into the Texas game, and we'll get more into that. But these Cardinals from Muncie, Indiana, I do want to say this is a team that we thought was going to be a pretty poor MAC team. And looking at these guys on the field before the game, this did not look like some Akron teams I've seen, for instance. Like this, these guys had some athletes, and it turned out that some of their defensive linemen ended up looking pretty doggone good on the day. And of course, we'll get to that. But the quarterback was the talk of the game, both leading in and in the game. I mean, he was a load. He was tough to bring down. Could not throw the ball on the Buckeyes. And I think the Ohio State secondary got some pretty light work overall on the day, though there were some really good performances. We will get to that. We will, of course, get to the rival, but I think we're going to do that in a separate video, as they almost lost to a MAC team, should have maybe lost to a MAC team, and stormed the field after beating a MAC team, which might be the most embarrassing thing I've seen all week. But definitely we'll talk about that in Texas, Texas State throughout the week, as well as obviously previewing a ton of that game. I'll be leaving for Thursday, heading down to Austin for the Texas game. If anybody's going, get a hold of us over on Buckeye Insiders. Join. We'll let you know where we're at. We're going to do a couple of meetups and potentially a live show from down there. But when we talk about this game here, game number one, it's hard to know how much we saw that we can depend on moving forward, because there's a lot of stuff we thought that we were going to see coming in that we didn't see. And it's just like, all right, well, was it gamesmanship on the part of, you know, the information leaking, or what they showed us in the preseason or in the spring as far as who's going to maybe start here or there? Was it gamesmanship then, or is it still gamesmanship now, where we didn't really see what we're going to see next week? We just won't know till we get to Texas. But got to start with Jim Tressel. Jim Tressel being put into the Ring of Honor, talked at halftime to the press in the press box, and continually telling the story over the last month about his dad, a farmer from Ohio who always wanted to play at Ohio State, was the player of the year in the state of Ohio, came to Ohio State for spring practice, and then went off to World War II, never got to live out his dream. And seeing, you know, his dad's name up there, I just don't know that there's a guy walking this earth that I respect as much as Jim Tressel. I just love him. To hear him tell that story is just like, I don't know, almost brings a tear to my eye. He's just the best, man. He's just the best. And I'm so happy that he's got his name up there. How clever was how they covered his name? I don't know if you saw it on the broadcast. I'm imagining you did. But the sweater vest banner with the tie, it was just amazing. Maybe the coolest piece of memorabilia I could ever get down here in the studio. As Bill Landis pointed out to me, he's expecting to see a replica back here. I think I ought to get one made. That was amazing. But Maurice Clarett then goes and yanks the rope on the victory bell harder than I've ever heard anybody yank that rope. I mean, our man was jacked. He's jacked as it is, but he was jacked up to ring the bell. That puppy was banging. It was loud. and a huge ovation for it. Also, of course, Senior Day, and the biggest single ovation of any of the seniors coming out, Brandon Innes. Shout out to B.I. Clearly a beloved guy, and I think sometimes when you live inside the bubble, you and I live in the bubble. And the bubble is those of us who talk about this every day, year-round, we're always in on it. And of course, we probably got some folks who aren't in on it year-round here with us now. But of the folks that live in this year-round, Brandon Innes, the name comes up, it's a lightning rod. Right in the stadium with the 100,000, it's nothing but love. And I thought that was great for him to hear because he deserves nothing but love. And I also thought he looked pretty damn good, but we'll certainly get to the wide receivers. But what we saw here in this game coming out, I think the story of the game from the start, Art Smith, and something that I wanted to see, one thing I could see coming into this game that would make me feel great moving forward with the rest of the season. There was one thing, and that was Art Smith messing with the tempo at all. Now, it didn't mean that if he didn't mess with the tempo at all, that we wouldn't see it for the rest of the season, because it's the bye game against Ball State. But if we did see it against Ball State, to me, that tells me we're going to see it the rest of the season. And we literally saw, after the first play, the Buckeyes rush up to the line and run play number two. And that's all I need to see to know that we will no longer watch the 135th out of 136th slowest paced offense in the FBS, because that's all it takes, man. Sprinkle it in here or there and not have this total aversion to ever running any kind of tempo, and you're not going to finish dead last. It's going to be a much smoother offense. He's going to use that to his advantage. It wasn't the only time he did it throughout the day. It was so amazing. I mean, it was tougher to keep notes at times, because they were hurrying up to the ball. My setup, watch the play, click back on the YouTube TV, watch the replay, and key in on several players until they go back to the new play. I couldn't do any of it at times because they were moving fast, and it was very welcomed, even though I have some more homework to do that I have not gotten done. And, of course, I'm going to do a lot of give a lot of original first takes on some of these players that I saw that maybe didn't have great performances, but this is without the hindsight of being able to watch the all 22 yet, as I've not been able to do that. I've only watched the game one and a half times right now, and the first time in that press box, which is pretty high up, though I did use my binoculars for quite a bit of the time, which is a difficult way to watch the game, but you do what you got to do. Art Smith has total control of this offense. I think the tempo told us that. Something else that I think is kind of interesting, Chip Kelly, Ryan Day's mentor, Brian Hartline, Ryan Day's mentee, a different dynamic and different relationships with both of those guys. And then a third different relationship to Art Smith. And the relationship there between him and Ryan Day is, in my opinion, Ryan Day respects him as a peer, right? That's a NFL head coach. He's a peer. Just a different relationship when you know someone really good, whether it be your mentor or your mentee. And both Chip and Brian Hartline wanted to call the offense from down on the field. And Ryan Day wanted them up in the booth. And ultimately, that's what happened. Not with Art. Art wanted to be on the field. Art is down on the field calling plays. So it is just interesting. I do think it reinforces my theory that there is this is all on Art, man. He's the total head coach of the offense. And this is his offense. Tempo included. I love it. And I thought that the debut was darn near flawless from Art Smith's perspective. Absolutely loved it. Used tempo as a weapon. We got to see maybe a different style of the wide receivers looked a little different. The routes, one of the catches Brandon Innes made, he was in motion. The route was smooth. It just looked a little different. But the biggest part of the passing game early on to me was the connection that Julian Sain has developed with all three of these starters, not just JJ. And obviously JJ was the star of the game, certainly the star of the first half of the game. And the connection that Julian Sain has with JJ now looks incredible in year two. Julian asked about that in the press conference after the game. They worked all summer on it, and it looks so automatic against a team like this, or against really single coverage against anybody. What's it going to look like moving forward next week into the Texas game? We'll see. Texas you know, the scene of the crime, JJ's maybe least productive game of his career at this point. We're going to find out. But what did emerge and what we were hoping for was a great connection with a number two receiver, which we've increasingly thought was not just going to be Devin McKeown, but it was going to be Devin McKeown. It was going to look really, really good. And it couldn't have been better to me. It could not have been better. Devin McKeown looked like a complete wide receiver. There was no like putting that guy into a box as a yards after catch guy. And this is what we thought after watching him in the preseason in those first couple of practices where he made some absurd downfield catches. But it was more than that. Like the whole look to it, tiptoeing the sideline, the out routes, like he just looks like, all right, this is a complete wide receiver, a legit number two, a guy that Ryan Day said is, you know, you ask it people around here and they'll tell you he's as good as anybody we've had. Certainly in game one, it looks like he has all the ability to potentially be that type of guy. And that just makes JJ all the better. And then when we talk about BI, some tough catches starting off the game, there were three catches early. That was all he ended up having, but really good stuff there from BI as well. But JJ's touchdown to start off the festivities for the Buckeyes, a 48 yarder where the corner ends up blitzing, or maybe he had an assignment in the flat. He looked confused. He kind of hesitated, but didn't look like it was an intentional hesitation. It looked like I'm in a confused spot hesitation. And then he ends up blitzing. As soon as he does, you can see it's over. And I think seven people said it around me, including myself, that's over. And it was over. Julian launches it. JJ catches it on his way to the ground like this, puts the ball up with one hand, and it just all looks so easy for that dude that it immediately just gets you so excited for this year. And then touchdown number two, which I put on the thumbnail of this video, JJ hits the Heisman pose, and he's not the only one that's done that this week. Malachi Toney did it several times. We are seeing a wide receiver race here potentially that could capture the imagination for the Heisman this year, which helps JJ tremendously for that honor. I think if we can get this rolling, KJ Duff at Rutgers, also, we talked about his game I don't remember how many balls he caught, but 196 yards, including a 78 yarder, an 88 yarder. And I don't know that playing at Rutgers is going to help him out too much, but the more you can keep these big time wide receiver performances and kind of make this a thing between them, the better off that is for the potential of Jeremiah winning the Heisman. But Art Smith showing the way he wanted to get him the ball, which is what JJ said. When asked about Art Smith or the Art Smith difference, he gets me the ball. Not like he didn't get the ball before, but the focal point of the offense was clearly Jeremiah Smith when he was in the game. And I think that is obviously a recipe for success. Make him stop him, and then we can go from there. You know, you're going to mix it up, but he's the primary. No doubt, every time, he's the primary. Unless things aren't working that direction or they want to roll coverage over, that's the primary. As for Sayan himself, Julian Sayan in his debut on the year goes 21 for 25, an 84% completion percentage, 320 yards, three touchdowns, and that was all exciting. But maybe the most exciting in one of the biggest conversations of the offseason here on this show and from Ryan Day, the X factor. Talked about Fernando Mendoza and compared him to Julian Sayan last week. Fernando Mendoza rushed for 29 first downs, 370 yards on the year. Julian Sayan had 44 yards rushing on the year, 9 first downs. We don't need to see Julian Sayan rush for 300 yards. All I think we really need to see is Julian Sayan double that first down rushing. So instead of picking up 9 with his legs, if he picks up 18 with his legs, because we can assume that the majority of the time he's going to be trying to pick those up with his legs, going to be big games. If he can double that number, then that is probably enough of the X factor to put his game over the top to be, all right, this is absolutely a national championship caliber quarterback. The run that he had at the goal line, while not as flashy and didn't have to fight through as much as Fernando Mendoza's national championship touchdown run, it was kind of similar. The thought process was all the same. And when he took off, I mean, it all really looked like, all right, this is a guy who gets it, who really understands right now is when I go. And I love it. Look like moving forward. I think that all the talk about the X factor. Like, that's what it is. That's all that's needed. And he can make that happen. I knew it had the ability and it looked really, really smooth and natural. And we're going to see more of that. I think we're going to see now more than double that 9 first downs on the year. So eat your heart out, Mendoza. Sain did it against Ball State. Now, along with those 3 starting wide receivers, we also saw Chris Henry Jr. and Brock Boyd. And of course, we knew we would on the day. Did not expect to see them in the first quarter. Many don't think you're going to see this 6 deep wide receiver rotation throughout the year in big games. They think it'll just, 3, 4, maybe tops. I don't know, after the performance of these guys yesterday, I think they both kind of came in and not only looked good, but did what you really want to see young guys do, and that is bust their butt blocking, as both of those long touchdown runs featured Brock Boyd out there 40 yards downfield, blocking his butt off, making the final block. Chris Henry Jr. also involved in that. And that is like, yeah, if you're out doing that, if you're that situationally aware, in addition to that, Brock was pretty much, I hate to say this because it just sounds like a homer take, but he was open every route. And he's been kind of a security blanket for these quarterbacks throughout the preseason because he is always open. He was open every time and made a great 22-yard catch that he dug out. Chris started off like JJ, and Ryan Day brought it up in the post game that Jeremiah dropped his first catch too, as Chris drops a ball from Luke Fahey that pops right off his pads and turns into an interception. And that wasn't all for JJ. He got a penalty the very next play. And then Chris comes back. I think he might have been potentially a drop. I don't know if he got scored a drop on another one, but that he didn't end up reeling in. But then he does catch a touchdown on the day. So both those two with the pretty big catch on the day, as Chris gets a touchdown, Brock gets maybe the more impressive catch, dropping down and digging it off the carpet. And I don't know that we've seen anybody in recent years that's been as good at that particular kind of catch as Brock. I've seen so many of those kind of catches from him where it looks like that one's coming up short and he somehow gets down and gets it. And it was fantastic. Obviously, another freshman really takes the cake today as kind of the story of the day out of that class. And that is Legend Bay, who we were told was going to take the first kickoff out of the end zone. And he does, 6 yards deep. And then the second time, with Brandon Innes telling him not to, he takes it out again on a little miscommunication or big time nerves. And honestly, it just felt so legend to me. It felt so legend. Like, the whole thing was like, that's what you're going to get out of Legend as a freshman. Because, we've seen some missteps from Legend as a freshman. Not a bad kid, but some immaturity, perhaps. He needs some time. But Ryan Day showed that he's clearly willing to deal with that for the good stuff of Legend, which we also saw. And the ability to stop on a dime, then float laterally, then hit full speed. Nobody can do it quite like Legend Bay. And nobody's done it at Ohio State like that since Braxton Miller. Legend probably not as twitched as Brax, but the ability to stop and start on a dime is to me right there with Braxton Miller. I feel like Braxton's cuts are maybe a little quicker. I don't know if Braxton could even stop and start and float like we just saw. I don't know that float has ever been used when describing a run, but I feel like he floated to the right when he stopped on a dime, then was 4 yards later, just a couple of twitches after that. And I think he floated, but a fantastic run. And Legend was, had a couple of big plays, obviously, on the game. It was so cool to see that happen in game number one, after we really hadn't had a chance to see it in the preseason at all. The first couple of spring practices or preseason practices, he did not participate because of an event, Ryan Day called it. Don't know what event that was. Not going to speculate. Doesn't matter. It's clear that Ryan Day, when he talks about him, loves him, and he's going to give him his chances to, and he's going to give him his hard coaching. And he said he takes coaching well. But let's talk about the rushing attack on the whole, as The backs were 35 for 237, 9.3 yards a carry, 15 missed tackles forced, which is excellent compared to last year. Jacoby with 6 missed tackles forced, Bo with 5, and they both tied with 83 yards. Jacoby on 8 carries, Bo on 9. That sounds fantastic. 8 and 9 carries for 83 yards, 5 and 6 missed tackles forced. The backs ran well. Legend, 6 for 37. Isaiah, 5 for 27, 237 total. Why Isaiah was the fourth back in the game? No idea. But look, I've since Ohio State brought Legend Bay in the transfer portal, this is no C.J. Donaldson situation. Jacoby's a serious back, and I think he showed that today, that you've got three backs that are three down backs that you can rely on. Is it an issue that he came in before Isaiah? No. They all looked really good to me. Eventually, of course, they started off 3.6 yards per carry in quarter number one, then 0.4 yards per carry in quarter number two, and it absolutely was through no fault of their own. I mean, I thought that they all ran really well throughout the day, including one of the biggest talking points of the offseason, and that is Bo Jackson and the ability to take that 10-yard run and turn it into a 20 and take that 15 and turn it into a 30. Ryan Day said that he's got confidence, what he's seen on the field, that he is now improving in that heading into game one, and that is certainly what we saw. We saw Bo, who was number 3 in the country last year in 10-yard runs, but then dropped off the board when we go down to 15-yard runs. We saw him get that 10, get that 15, break a tackle, break another tackle, and then take it to the house. Now, would he have made it to the house against a really fast secondary? Maybe not, but he'd have gotten 40, and he ends up busting one off, as does Jacoby. And Jacoby took a lick and put a guy on his keister and then kept on going. So great performances out of those two. Wish we could have seen Isaiah in before the second team line was in, because they kind of got collapsed. But, you know, you could kind of say the same thing for the first team offensive line. And I guess here's where we'll get into the not so great part of the game. Maybe the part that I've seen maybe some over concern about, and that is the offensive line. In addition to the Art Smith situation, what I really wanted to see was, you know, some tempo in game one that would kind of put my mind at ease that the Turtle offense was dead. And just to be clear, I do believe the Turtle offense is officially dead. But I also wanted to see this offensive line that Ryan Day said, the interior, right? And he was talking about, since they've theoretically made the decision to have Austin Cervelde at right guard, Luke Montgomery at left guard, and Carson at center. Those three guys with Art Smith were walking on water. And he was saying, like, they're all so happy. You had Carson Hinsman talking about being with Art Smith last week, that, you know, the energy was palpable. And what I wanted to see more than anything out of this offensive line was an inspired, like, performance that just beat these guys that should not be on the field with them into submission. And everybody would say it's just Ball State, who cares? But I would say, you know, you can say that, but there are plenty of times we have seen an Ohio State team come out early on against a team like a Youngstown State and not look dominant on the offensive line. And that's not what I want to see. So it's going to mean something to me if they come out and not just make them quit, but do it with attitude. And that is fully what I expected to see. And my goodness, did we not see that? We saw anything but in the first half. It's really disheartening, particularly with Texas coming up next week. And it's not just Phil Daniels, who everybody wants to talk about. Phil Daniels, like, it was much more than Phil Daniels, who was not doing his job. Now, Phil stood out. Phil stood out, and of course, we'll talk about Phil. But to me, the whole reason that they wanted to use this lineup, which wasn't my favorite lineup, but I really liked, and I mean the lineup of Ian Moore and Phil Daniels at tackle, and then your three vets and Luke, Carson, and Austin in the middle, was to really control the run game at the point of attack. And all right, I'm down with it. But understand you do sacrifice your two best tackles, in my opinion, in that lineup, is what I've been saying. And then the other option to me, which is maybe you sacrifice a little bit at right guard, but you got your two best tackles. Why is that the best? I think that's the best option for me. And we had this conversation with our buddy Landon Tangwell on last week. And it was about Phil Daniels, who, in both of our opinions, is the number three best tackle on this team behind Ian Moore and behind Austin Saraville. But the reason for me why you prioritize the tackles is because when it comes to winning a national championship, which is what this team's ultimate goal is, you are going to need to face a guy that's going to maul most people's tackles. That guy last year was Reuben Bain. And Landon's, you know, kind of defense was, you know, let's keep in mind, that was Reuben Bain. But to me, it's like, yes, that's exactly right. That is who you got to beat to win a national championship. You've got to beat a Reuben Bain. And you've got to have a tackle that can handle that. So do I want tackle number three or tackle number two? What are my priorities? Phil Daniels comes out on the day and gets pulled after, all right, maybe I can't say pulled. Doesn't look good in the first two possessions. And then in possession number three, we see the alternate offensive line. The alternate offensive line, the one I would have chosen from the beginning, and that includes your two best tackles with Ian and Austin at tackle. And then it was Gabe Van Sickle at right guard, not Josh Padilla, who we thought was kind of leading that spot. Either way, they're interchangeable, I think, to the staff. Maybe they were just throwing Gabe out there first. But we see that one roll out in possession number three. Ryan Day was asked about it after the game. Was this planned? He said the competition continues. Was it planned? Does the competition continue? Was it get Phil out and let me talk to him? Don't know. But when Phil came back in the game, there was a couple hiccups even after that. And I was asked, I have a mailbag show scheduled. This is one of the questions I wanted to answer. I'll answer it to you like I would have answered it before the game. Juck, you got to have more faith in Phillip Daniels. He wasn't that bad last year. We all know right guard was the weak spot. Make a helm look a little bad as well. Making him look a little bad as well. I think that's what that is getting at. At times, maybe you have one or two bad games, but he did real good with Texas pass rush. Longtime fan, can you please explain in your video one time why you're not so high on Phillip Daniels when he only had one or two bad games, being as a first-time starter at Ohio State coming from Minnesota? My answer about that coming into the game would have been the same as it is now. I really like Phillip Daniels. I just don't think Phillip Daniels is in your five best. If he's at tackle, I think had he navigated his way over to guard, he very well could be. And that's really all it is. But I tend to do this thing that I'm noticing, this is in year three of the show, that when I'm really high on someone, sometimes that makes me almost sound like I'm really negative against somebody else. Obviously, I've said all off season, I think Ian Moore ends this season as the number one lineman on this team. And apparently in doing that, I have made some people feel like I don't dislike Phil Daniels as a player. Not true. I do think Phil is a guard. I think he's a natural guard and could be a really good road grading guard. I don't think he's a top tier tackle. I don't think he's a top tier tackle who, even though Colin Simmons last year against Texas, the Buckeyes did a good job against, didn't rush much. I don't think that Phil did a great job, particularly one-on-one with him. Ohio State did good against him. What do you think is the situation next week with Colin Simmons, who is also more physical, better as a player? This might potentially be an issue early in the game if they roll back out with Phil and we see another line change again. I don't know. Disheartening to see, though. It was disheartening to see in game number one against a MAC team. There's no doubt about that. Ryan Day said that he thought Art Smith and Tyler Bowen did a good job making the – actually, let me play what – here's what he had to say about the adjustments and getting it fixed at halftime.
Yeah, coming into halftime, I don't think anybody who said the run game looked great, but that's why you play a whole game of football. And in those first two drives in the second half, we were able to hit some of those things. But we're going to get on the film and recognize the things that we, you know, did well, but and build confidence on that, because there was a lot in this game to build confidence on. But then the areas, where, you know, we didn't do as good. And, you know, there was a couple things early on that, you know, they did movement wise that we finally got identified. I think Arthur and Tyler did a good job of recognizing that at half, making a few adjustments on some of the schemes.
Love RD, love Art Smith so far. Tyler Bowen, I do think that he had a rough year last year, but, you know, it was his first year back at the position. You're playing Ball State. You got iPads on the sideline. I'm happy that they identified what Ball State was doing, what these Wizards on the other sideline were doing at halftime. Like, happy that that was identified at halftime. But I would expect that the NFL offensive coordinator, along with the former offensive coordinator, the NFL head coach offensive coordinator, along with Tyler Bowen, coming as Virginia Tech's offensive coordinator to Ohio State as the offensive line coach, would have been able to figure out on their iPads what the Wizards across the field were doing that they could have counteracted before waiting till halftime. That is something that in game one, and granted, this is their first game of the season too, so they've got to work out some kinks, but can we not figure this out on the fly that we got to wait till halftime to figure out how to correct that problem? Like, that, when I heard that, I'm like, what are we talking about here? This is the most supported financial staff in the country. It's the biggest coaching pool in the country with literally, guys that other programs would die for on their coaching staff. You're telling me we got to wait till halftime with iPads to figure out what they're doing that we need to counteract? Like, it just doesn't sound good enough, really, but it is game one. It is just game one. How much should we take away from all this, I guess, is the biggest question. Not much. I don't think we should take much out of it. It was the first half of the first game. And as frustrating as it was to watch, because you, like me, probably expected absolute domination, which is what we should expect, we didn't see it. I'm sure it was a real wake-up call to whatever it is they need to do. And they've got Texas next week. Does it change your pick? I think nationally it'll change a lot of picks. It might change the line a little bit. We'll certainly talk about that moving on. But does it shake my confidence in the group going forward on the season? Just this much. Just this much. I'm certainly not hitting a panic button, because it was absolutely ridiculous that they didn't dominate that team. They should have up front. They obviously agree. There's no doubt they're coming at it harder than ever. But at the same point, you were just walking on water last week. I would have expected that out of you right off the rip. Disappointing, but hasn't shaken my faith in that crew. I still believe this is one of the best offensive lines in the country, with guys that really, really feel great about each other as a unit. And I'm looking forward to seeing them play game number two against Texas, because coming out of that one, I think then we'll have a pretty good read on what we can expect out of them. Interesting stuff. Let's move over to the defensive side of the ball. And I think maybe the third thing I talked about most in the pregame show had to do with not just Kenyatta Jackson, but starting across from Kenyatta Jackson, the other defensive end. That, to me, how good that guy played, whoever that guy was going to tell the tale of how much we could get out of Kenyatta Jackson this year. Would we get the full Kenyatta experience? Would he be freed up to roam across the line like Caden Curry did last year and be as disruptive as Caden Curry? I think the only way that that happens is if you really trust the guy who is in the Kenyatta role from last year. And it seemed like it was definitely going to be Bo Jackson throughout the preseason. I'm sorry, Bo Atkinson throughout the preseason. And Bo Atkinson, if he were to come in and be that guy and be that guy really good, would be a huge story, because we're talking about a guy who came to Ohio State as a transfer from North Carolina, played 35 snaps against Texas in game one. And by the time we got to the Indiana game, he was playing five, did not play at all against Miami. And the trend line was just straight down. Who'd he lose those snaps to? A true freshman in Zion Grady, who, while he was a good quality true freshman, it wasn't like he came in and was like DJ Jacobs coming in. All right, man, this, you know, you gotta play the kid. Like, that's not what it was like. This was more Bo Atkinson not really doing his job. And a lot of it was stiffness as an athlete, not quite as much power as needed. And we saw all this work in the offseason. I respect the hell out of the fact that he stayed, doubled down, worked his butt off after practice, and put on some clear weight, which we can see, still looks in shape. And then he comes out week one, and what do we see? It's not him. It's not him. He's not there. All this talk about Bo Atkinson starting the guy, I couldn't even believe it. It wasn't him. Zion Grady started the game. Now, the two ended up playing the same amount of snaps exactly. So, similar to the fact that we didn't see James Smith start the game either, a lot to talk about with this defensive line, which I'm sure we'll talk about throughout the week. The defense as a whole, 165 yards, 3 of 14 on third down, 6 tackles for loss, 2 sacks, 1 pick, 37 players got action, including C.J. Sana with a big fired up tackle. Was happy to see that for the freshman out of Olentangy. But with Bo and Zion, Zion had a better game. Zion had a better game. Have not watched the film again. Haven't seen any all 22. I watched the game live and watched half of the game here before I started to see a few things I wanted to look at again. But Bo Atkinson, to me, the talk was athletic flexibility, maybe a little burst. Things were going to be different with Bo as you looked at Bo. And I found this all, I was very skeptical of this because I just don't feel at 22 years old in one off season, there really can be a big jump made in athletic flexibility when we're talking about it also coinciding with a bulk, which he did. He bulked. And how often do you, as an adult, put on 10, 15 pounds and get more flexible? I don't know, man. He's an adult. It just doesn't happen where you bulk and get more flexible at the same time. I mean, I guess you can do that through puberty, but not as an adult. It didn't happen. There, I don't know. Maybe there's some more hip flexibility. As an athlete, I'll tell you this. It looked no different to me. It looked absolutely no different. It looked like exactly the same Bo Atkinson athletically that we saw last year. Is he more powerful? Again, I haven't watched the film, but just looking at him as an athlete through my binoculars, it looked like the exact same Bo Atkinson to me. Zion Grady looked better than he looked in the preseason, I'll tell you that. Athletically, those two next to each other, they weren't on the field, but back-to-back, Zion clearly the better athlete. We'll talk about maybe the best athlete in a little bit, but let's get to James Smith, who is another one that I was very excited for. Did not start. Edrick and John Walker started. Both played solid. John Walker played better to me. James Smith comes in, and to me, James Smith, all the potential in the world to be a potential first-round draft pick. One of the things that we've talked about here in the offseason about James is James just has to put it all together at Ohio State finishing school. He's got the talent. He comes in. He gets bigger. He gets stronger. The mind's right. And the issues that he had as a younger guy was, you know, he could beat his man and he would whoop his man and then he would over pursue or he would, not get heels depth and read and react. He would just run right past the play or he would let penalties get the best of him. So all this buildup for James and in his first big time play, James in pursuit looks like he's shot out of a cannon. I mean, the athleticism on him is just fantastic for a guy that size. And he goes and makes a tackle and gets called for a penalty literally on the very first play he makes at Ohio State. A horse collar, flags come flying from four directions. And it's just like, there it is, man. It's quintessential James. Got to knock that off. You can't do that. He could have made the play without reaching up and grabbing. And, you know, it was disappointing because I was just – obviously, I couldn't jump up and down. I was in the press box, but I was feeling my chest jump up and down for him. So that sucked to see. But all in all, defensive line, I need to watch more to really get a read on how each guy played. We'll go over a couple of the grades that I got from PFF for him because they highlight a little something I want to show you. But first, let's talk linebackers real quick. As Peyton Pierce took over as the the defensive leader. I thought he looked pretty solid. All four linebackers looked pretty solid. But to me, it was really TJ and Riley who stuck out, and they certainly were the tackling machines on the day. TJ with five tackles and a pick. Riley with six tackles, and he looked excellent. Riley, they couldn't block him. They were coming up trying to block him. He'd shed his block, make a tackle. He was great. I saw him do it twice. There's probably more on there of it. But Riley looked excellent. TJ looked excellent. TJ's pick was excellent. He talked after the game about his pick. The pick, well, we'll get there. Allegro, you know, look, this is a guy that I've not been as high, I think, as a lot of people in the offseason on. I was really impressed. I was really impressed with Allegro moving out there. I thought he looked really sudden. Seeing some guy in Wisconsin film is one thing, and in the preseason is another. But seeing him on the field game day, I was feeling really, really confident as the game moved on. Well, okay, this guy, he really does have this kind of juice. And that's what I doubted. I doubted that he had the juice. The finishing power, yeah. Good angles of pursuit. He's a smart player, but he does have the juice that I was doubting a little bit that he had. And this four-man crew right here, you know, Ohio State usually in 2023, 2024, 2025, you got two linebackers that play 600 snaps and a third that plays 300. That is not the case this year. All four of these guys are playing and playing a lot. They all deserve it, and they're all really damn good. So that's excellent news. Excellent news. Let's move to the youth. Before the game, I was on the pregame show at Buckeye Insiders, and you had to pick one guy who was a freshman who was going to make a big impact. And I chose, of course, Kari Wilder. Who else would I choose? Guy's not played a game yet at Ohio State, and his jersey is sitting behind me on the wall. This is a guy that I just fell in love with his game and his tools a year and a half ago. Kari Wilder, the number 32 defensive lineman in the country. Oh my gosh, they missed one. This kid is legit. First time getting to see Kari Wilder in person. Kari is absolutely ready to play. Wide open for Kari Wilder. The most twitched up defensive end in the room. The most aggressive guy that I saw. Nobody's more aggressive. Without a doubt, the most talented kid in that room. He is an absolute dog. He's going to be a dog this year.
And I think he has the capabilities and the mindset and the attitude to be the next great Ohio State defensive lineman.
I think 34 is a budding superstar, and I think he's going to eat this year. Now, we did see Epi. We did see Zion, both of whom look very good. And I like them both as players. I don't mean to knock them at all. But to me, Kari is a budding superstar. And Kari looked like that on literally play number one at Ohio State, a budding superstar. Kari caused that interception for TJ Alford. Kari beat a double team. Kari was playing inside on third down, and he was sensational on the game. Pre-game, in that uniform for the first time on the field, he looked like just an absolute dude. And it is, it's on. It's on right now. Like, this kid is playing, he's eating, he's absolutely a 100 snap guy, and he's going to make some serious plays this year for the Buckeyes. Not only is it the ability to make the plays, it's the intensity even when he lines up. I talked about this, guys. I talked about this in the spring. Everything he does looks different in that group of players. Even lining up, going through drills, running two drills from one to the next, and you could see yesterday, just lining up, getting in his stance, there is a different level of intensity from a guy who's a very quiet guy, and all he cares about is being a monster at football. That's all he cares about. Like, he's got it all. The whole package, it's all there. Going to be a big part of this year's team. I couldn't be happier for him. Also for being absolutely right from the time they went out and visited the top 300 prospect. That kid is going to be a dude in college football and real, real young. So here we go. The Kari Wilder experiment begins, and I'm pumped. I'm so pumped. So Jordan Thomas, another one of our Juck guys here who I love, Bergen Catholic, a guy who was a top 100 guy that was Tim Walton's top of his board at cornerback. A lot of people questioned that. Five-star athlete. Look, not a five-star player, but to me, an absolute five-star athlete. And you saw a little flash of that on the field yesterday. Made a tackle, a nasty tackle. Got fired up. Loved it. He's big. He's strong. He's smart. He's going to be a real dude on this team. But obviously, we've got to talk about Jay Timmons, who, when we talk about Jay and the other guys that have done what Jay just did yesterday, Antoine Winfield, Nate Clements, Dante Whitner, Malcolm Jenkins, I mean, legends. Jay Timmons joins that group as guys who have started as freshmen at nickel. And Jay, I think we just saw the first start of the first game and his first opportunity of a future first rounder who looks like a star already. And all the noise that all of his teammates have been talking about all along, he was playing outside corner. He was playing nickel. He was on PBUs. He not only did he make some tackles, but he went in against the big boy, the quarterback, man. That kid was a load. Kenyatta Jackson was having a hard time bringing him down. And Jay had him squared up dead to rights and had the opportunity to go really low at his feet or to take him on upper thigh. And Jay wasn't scared at all and hit him. And the dude had so much momentum that he kept going for a couple of yards. But they eventually cleaned up the tackle, some other Buckeyes. He would have fallen. He was on his way down. Jay made that tackle. The fact that he went in there like that, no fear, absolutely fearless, like a rocket, it tells you something, man. That's who he is as a player. That guy out there looks sensational, and we've got 3 years of watching that dude dominate, and that is exciting stuff. So Jay Timmons, despite Kari's good play and some and obviously Legend's good play, Jay Timmons to me was the freshman of the day, and a fantastic, fantastic performance. So all in all, a really, really fun day, and we will talk, of course, a little more about this game and a little more about some of these performances when we get an opportunity to review the All-22. I do have a couple of statistics I want to share with you when we talk about Kenyatta Jackson's game. Kenyatta Jackson with an unbelievable over 50% win rate in true pass sets yesterday. I think a lot of people felt like Kenyatta Jackson didn't do much coming out of the game. Kenyatta Jackson played really, really good. Whooped his man nonstop. As far as the tight ends, this is a group in Nate Roberts that I love. After that, I just don't feel so much confidence in it yet. And I didn't feel that yesterday. I do remember seeing a couple of plays where I was like, not a good one for Bennett, not a good one for Mason. But again, that's, you know, you really got to key in on that on every play and how they're really how they're going about every play to get an accurate gauge. But I did see a couple where I was like, that doesn't look great. And that was in the first half when the run game was not looking great as well. And we talk about the offensive line, but those tight ends could very well be to blame for some of that too. But all in all, man, a fun game. We'll hit on some more of it. Of course, we do have Luke Fahey coming in second. This is a conversation that I'm going to have in a video on its own, because I think it's a huge conversation and it'll just get lost in the rest of this. But it also isn't maybe a huge conversation pertaining to this season, we hope. Moving forward and all the baggage that came with that decision, I think it was enormous. So we'll talk about that in a separate video. We will also be talking about, of course, we always go over all the other games, but the situation up in Ann Arbor yesterday where Western Michigan goes up and comes away with a loss when it looked like they should have had a win. So we'll talk about that as well. And that'll do it for today, guys. I appreciate you so much. Have a fantastic Sunday. I'll talk to you soon. Juggin' Bucks out.